Hello, this is Mary, and I'll be reading selections from the Decatur Herald and Review from Monday, April 7th, 2025. From the front page, weather, take steps to survive tornado. Experts, proper preparation can make life-death difference, by Jeff Martin, Associated Press. With new innovations and technology, scientists have learned from major tornado outbreaks over the years how to improve safety guidance. During tornado season, forecasters try to get the word out about staying safe during a storm, but also planning for it ahead of time. Tornado seasons typically begin at different times in different parts of the United States. In what has historically been known as Tornado Alley, a designation that typically includes Kansas, Oklahoma, and Texas, the peak of tornado season is May into early June. But the season starts earlier in what's often called Dixie Alley, made up of southern states such as Arkansas, Louisiana, Mississippi, Alabama, and Georgia. The idea of a tornado alley can be misleading, since tornadoes have been reported in all 50 states. About 1,200 tornadoes strike the U.S. every year, and each year violent twisters happen outside these traditional alleys of tornado outbreaks, according to the National Severe Storms Laboratory. Recent twisters have even struck in places accustomed to them, such as one near Los Angeles that tore apart rooftops and injured one person. When a tornado takes aim at your house, and the sirens are sounding, the dogs are barking, and the children are screaming, there are some last-minute precautions that could save the lives of you and your loved ones. Experts also recommend a few simple steps to prepare well before the twister is on your doorstep. Here's a look at some tornado safety tips. How do I get emergency updates? Weather radios, specialized receivers that get alerts and can sound an alarm in an emergency, are something that every home and business should have, said Rick Smith, the warning coordination meteorologist at the National Weather Service's forecast office in Norman, Oklahoma. It does feel like old-school technology, but they are life-saving devices, Smith said. Radios can be particularly valuable when tornadoes strike at night when people are sleeping. This can wake you up in the middle of the night with the alarm, Smith said. The National Weather Service encourages people to have multiple ways of being warned, which can include weather radios, a cell phone app, or other method in case power is lost. Redundancy is key, Smith said. Where should I take shelter? The ideal places to take shelter are enclosed underground shelters and basements, or a safe room above ground that is designed to withstand tornadic winds. But many people don't have that option. In Oklahoma, for example, the clay soil makes building basements expensive, so many homes don't have them. If you have to be above ground in a tornado, your goal is to put as many walls and barriers between you and the outside as you possibly can, Smith said. Smith recommends using mattresses, couch cushions, or other sturdy items to protect yourself from falling debris. Bicycle or sports helmets can provide crucial head protection. It's important that they are stored in a convenient place so they can be retrieved quickly when you have only minutes or seconds before a storm strikes. A car seat can help protect a small child, Smith said, and can be brought inside ahead of time. How can I keep my home safe? Recent research has shown that closing your home's garage door and all interior doors could ease the high winds inside somewhat by compartmentalizing them, according to Smith. Doing so is recommended during thunderstorms and tornadoes by the Insurance Institute for Business and Home Safety. That's the opposite of a commonly held misconception. There's still a chunk of people out there who think you're supposed to open the doors and windows to equalize the pressure, Smith said. It's also important to prepare for the tornado's aftermath, when you might emerge from a home or shelter to find downed trees and power lines and shredded buildings. Dress for disaster, such as wearing long pants and sturdy shoes, to make it easier to safely navigate treacherous terrain. An emergency kit of essentials, like drinking water and non-perishable food items, is also a good idea. With this threat of strong tornadoes in the forecast this week for many states, forecasters are urging people to have their emergency supplies, know where their safe places are, and have a family communication plan. What should I do if I'm driving? Don't look to Hollywood for sound tornado safety practices. The recent Hollywood film Twisters shows the character sprinting toward a highway underpass as a tornado approaches. If you are in a truck or car, you really don't have a lot of good options at that point, Smith said. Try not to get caught in that situation. The best thing to do is get off the road and try to find a building. If there is nowhere to go, there are no guaranteed safe options. When it comes to ditches, overpasses, or staying inside a car, people have survived doing all of those things. People have died doing all of those, Smith said. I have seen cars rolled up into unrecognizable balls of metal. Turning to page 2, local public safety news. Two saved from fire, arson suspected. Decatur. Firefighters rescued two Decatur men after an apartment house was set ablaze in a suspected arson attack and caught a neighboring home on fire. A news release from the Decatur Fire Department said the alarm call came in at 4:29 p.m. Friday, and the blaze started at 875 West North Street. This is a large, older home that had been converted into apartments. The fire then spread to the neighboring single-family home at 865 West North Street, the release said. Firefighters immediately began applying water to the blaze while other teams assisted in safely evacuating the occupants. One individual was rescued from each home. Police reports listed the rescued men as aged 72 and 56. And the fire department news release said both victims escaped serious injury and declined hospital treatment. They were being assisted with the accommodation needs by the Red Cross. Battalion Chief Anthony Maldonado, speaking to the Herald and Review on Sunday, said fire damage to the 875 West North Street address was extensive. The house at 865 took more minor damage as our crews stopped the fire from extending into that one, he added. Sergeant Joseph Sawyer with the Decatur Police Department said the incident had been listed as arson based on information from firefighters on the scene. They found some stuff that was apparently thrown through the window at 875 West North Street that was apparently combustible, and what they believed started the fire, Sawyer added. The incident remains under investigation. Anyone with information can call police at 217-424-2734 or Crime Stoppers at 217-423-8477. Women hurt, second sought after fight, Decatur. Police were seeking a female suspect accused of beating a woman about the head and face and inflicting multiple lacerations and abrasions close to the victim's eyes. Sergeant Joseph Sawyer with the Decatur Police Department said the violence happened Friday afternoon at an address on Leafland Avenue in Decatur. The injured person was struck with a metal object of some kind, he added. He said the police and her assailant He said the victim and her assailant appeared to be involved in a dispute over a mutual male acquaintance. The suspect accused of causing the injuries is being sought on a preliminary charge of aggravated battery involving great bodily harm or permanent disability. All preliminary charges are subject to review by the state attorney's office. Man accused of damaging vehicles. Decatur. A Decatur man is accused of using his upstairs apartment balcony as a launching pad from which he hurled weights and paint at his neighbor's parked vehicles, causing thousands of dollars in damage. Decatur Police Department Officer Riley Brelsford said Grundy, 45, had used weights to bombard a downstairs apartment's truck parked outside apartments in North Portage Place in December, causing about $1,000 in damages. Grundy was accused of striking again around January 30th, when he poured paint onto a neighbor's car at the same location, this time leaving a damage with a repair estimate up to $7,000. Grundy is denying two charges of criminal damage and had been arrested on a warrant March 22nd after failing to show for multiple court appearances in Macon County Circuit Court. He was brought to court in custody April 2nd for preliminary hearings on both charges and was represented by Chief Public Defender Michelle Sanders. She asked Brelsford if there was any surveillance footage that captured either of the criminal damage incidents, and the officer told her, "Not to my knowledge." Over the objections of Macon County State's Attorney Diane Corey, Judge Lindsay Shelton agreed to lift the sanction of jail time imposed after Grundy's previous missed court appearances, and he was granted pretrial release again after the April 2nd hearing. He is due back in court for a pretrial hearing on May 6th. Returning to the front page of the Monday, April 7th edition of the Decatur Herald and Review, U.S. government, feds fire LIHEAP utility and staff. $4.1 billion agency caught up in HHS overhaul, funding fate unclear, by Susan Hay. The Trump administration this past week laid off the entire staff of a $4.1 billion program that helps millions of low-income households pay for heat during the winter, unnerving state officials who now wonder whether they will still receive millions of dollars in expected federal payments. The roughly two dozen workers who ran the low-income home energy assistance program were among 10,000 people fired as part of a restructuring of the Department of Health and Human Services, according to Mark Wolf, executive director of the National Energy Assistance Directors Association. He said several senior employees who oversee the program, which serves about 6.2 million households annually, told him they were locked out of their building after arriving to work. The way they did it, there was no warning, he said. On Thursday, 13 U.S. senators, including two Republicans, sent a letter to Health Secretary Robert F. Kennedy Jr., urging the administration to reverse its decision to cut the LIHEAP staff. They warned the termination will undermine the agency's ability to provide a crucial lifeline for low-income seniors and families. The program already delivered the bulk of its aid to the states for this fiscal year, but had yet to distribute $378 million. It also helps households pay for the cost of air conditioning during sweltering summer months. When asked about the fate of LIHEAP and the outstanding payments, Amy Hillard, Deputy Press Secretary for House and Human Services, said in a statement, HHS will continue to comply with statutory requirements, and as a result of the reorganization, will be better positioned to execute on Congress's statutory intent. Speaking about the broader overhaul of his agency, Kennedy previously said it had to be recalibrated. Without any staff in place, states question how and if they will get the rest of their money, especially for upcoming summer cooling programs. What if we don't receive our remaining funds? If we don't, some states will not run their cooling programs this summer. They'll scale them back, Wolf said. State officials are involved in distributing aid, they said they are concerned LIHEAP will collapse without federal support. Emails bounce back from people that we've worked with for many years who are deeply knowledgeable of the program, said Peter Hadler, deputy director of the Connecticut Department of Social Services, noting his state is still owed $8 million. In Minnesota, where the northern part of the state received a foot of snow Wednesday, the state's Department of Commerce predicted that by mid-April, it will run out of money to help new applicants seeking help with heating and electric bills. The state expected an additional $12 to $13 million in federal funding, already approved by Congress. Those funds would help more than 10,000 households pay their utility bills and prevent power shutoffs. About 130,000 Minnesota households receive assistance each year through LIHEAP. Winter is still happening in Minnesota. It snowed almost a foot yesterday, said Pete Wyckoff, Deputy Commissioner of Energy Resources at the department. We do need that extra money to come through to get us through the rest of the winter season. Eligibility can differ by states, as well as the specific services provided. In general, the program assists families in covering utility bills or the cost of paying for home heating oil. It has received bipartisan congressional support for decades. Senator Susan Collins of Maine and Lisa Murkowski of Alaska were the two Republicans who signed on to the letter, imploring Kennedy to reverse any staffing or funding cuts that would jeopardize the program. From the front page, Day of Play, Kids Fest provides fun for a chilly Saturday, by Valerie Wells, Decatur. Briggs Martin didn't even let his parents go inside at the Kids Fest at Decatur Civic Center on Saturday until they let him thoroughly examine the fire engine parked outside. We came for the trucks, quipped his mother Meg, while Dad David set 2-year-old Briggs on the seat of the fire truck. The annual Kids Fest is a showcase for various organizations that serve children, as well as fun activities like inflatables, games, and of course vehicles like fire trucks, police cars, and backhoes for kids to climb into and examine. A Heroes of Legend cosplay group was there, and superheroes from Batman to Captain America posed for pictures and walked through the crowd. Vendors offered food, and organizations like the Salvation Army and Decatur Park District had booths for information and registration for summer fun. It's a super fun event for the community and for kids to come out and get some hands-on playing with certain items, jump in some bounce houses, burn some energy, said Emily Phillips, brand marketing manager with Central Illinois Multimedia Group, formerly Newhoff Media, who organized the event with sponsors Melanie and Al Schelling of State Farm. If you wanted a photo with the Easter Bunny, Malibu Jack's indoor theme park from Springfield was ready to accommodate, said owner Jonathan Tisch. And if you wanted Girl Scout cookies, the last few were for sale at the Girl Scouts of Central Illinois booth. Thanks to Troop 3274 leader Tamara Dickey and Scout Detriana Barbie. This was the 5th year of the Kids Fest, Phillips said, and the event usually draws more than 1,000 people. We have lots of different educational booths this year, she said. One of those was from the Macon County Conservation District, where Ashton Dukeman had pelts from various animals, such as raccoons, for kids to touch, and a California king snake named Marbles for them to pet. I like the snake, said Lily Lively, 6, whose little sister May, 3, also petted the snake. It was scaly. The sand table was another popular play spot, where several boys were operating pieces of miniature earth-moving equipment using remote controls. "It's awesome for the kids," said Jeanette Novak, whose sons, Harvey, 5, and Tim, 8, were playing there. "It gets them out of the house and off their iPads." National and world news, The Digest. White House. Trump, Netanyahu plan to meet Monday, today. Palm Beach Gardens, Florida. President Donald Trump plans to meet with Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu on Monday in their second White House sit-down since Trump returned to office. The leaders are expected to focus on the latest Israeli bombardment of Gaza and new U.S. tariffs announced by Trump against Israel and other countries. The visit, confirmed by a White House official Saturday, comes as Israel sets up a new security corridor across Gaza to pressure Hamas militants. Netanyahu's defense minister has said Israel would seize large areas of the territory and add them to its so-called security zones. Israel pledged to escalate the war until the militant group returns the hostages it took during its attack on Israel in October 2023, disarms and leaves the territory. Israel ended a ceasefire in March and imposed a halt on all imports of food, fuel, and humanitarian aid. Hundreds were killed in the past 2 weeks as Israel stepped up their operations. Gaza video appears to contradict Israeli claims. United Nations. Phone video from one of 15 Palestinian medics killed by Israeli forces last month appears to contradict Israeli claims that the medics' vehicles did not have emergency signals on when troops opened fire on them in southern Gaza. The footage shows the Red Crescent and civil defense teams driving slowly with their emergency lights flashing, logos visible, as they pull up to help an ambulance that came under fire earlier. The teams do not appear to act unusually or in a threatening manner. The Associated Press obtained the video from a UN diplomat on condition of anonymity. Israeli troops conducting operations in Tel al-Sultan killed 8 Red Crescent personnel, 6 civil service defense workers, and a UN staffer in the March 23rd shooting. Troops bulldozed over the bodies and mangled vehicles, burying them in a mass grave. Asked about the video, the Israeli military said Saturday the incident was under thorough investigation. Schools. New York State officials told the Trump administration Friday they will not comply with its demands to end diversity, equity, and inclusion practices in public schools, despite federal threats to terminate education funding. Musk. In a video conference Saturday, billionaire Elon Musk told Italy League leader Matteo Salvini that he hoped in the future the U.S. and Europe could create a very close, stronger partnership and reach a zero-tariff zone, a departure from other Trump administration officials. Currency. Israel's rial currency traded Saturday at a record low against the U.S. dollar, costing more than a million rials for a single dollar as tensions between Tehran and Washington rise. Ukraine. President Volodymyr Zelensky met the leaders of the British and French armed forces Saturday in Kiev to discuss potential deployment of a multinational peacekeeping force to Ukraine, despite U.S. President Donald Trump's reluctance to provide security guarantees. Lebanon. Deputy U.S. Special Envoy to the Middle East, Morgan Ortagus, visited Beirut on Saturday amid a fragile ceasefire with Israel and mounting U.S. pressure on Lebanon to rein in the militant Hezbollah group. rallies held across the country, more than 1,200 events planned against actions by Trump and Musk. Crowds of people angry about the way President Donald Trump is running the country marched and rallied in scores of American cities Saturday, the biggest day of demonstrations yet, by an opposition movement trying to regain its momentum after the shock of the Republicans' first weeks in office. Hands-off demonstrations were organized from more than 1,200 locations in all 50 states by more than 150 groups, including civil rights organizations, labor unions, LGBTQ plus advocates, veterans, and elections activists. The rallies were peaceful, with no reports of arrests. From the National Mall in Midtown Manhattan to San Francisco and multiple state capitals, thousands of protesters assailed Trump and billionaire Elon Musk's actions on government downsizing, the economy, immigration, human rights, education, and senior services. Demonstrators voiced anger over the administration's moves to fire thousands of federal workers, close Social Security Administration offices, effectively shutter entire agencies, deport immigrants, scale back protections for transgender people, and cut funding for health programs. The estimated number of people attending the events in the United States, as well as some that were held in Europe and even Mexico, was over 5 million people. There were several activities that took place in central Illinois, including demonstrations of over 1,000 people in Springfield, Champaign-Urbana, and Bloomington-Normal. And on the sports page on page 6, UConn returns to the throne by Doug Feinberg. UConn is back on top of women's basketball, winning its 12th national championship by routing defending champion South Carolina 82-59 on Sunday, behind AZ Fudd's 24 points. Sarah Strong added 24 points and 15 rebounds, and Paige Becker scored 17 points in her final game at UConn, who finished 37-3. It's amazing to have three people like that on the same team, UConn coach Gino Auriemma said. And Sarah Strong, you would think Sarah was graduating the way she plays, right? And she's a freshman. All three of them complement each other so well. They all have such unique skill sets. Becker's capped her stellar career with the Huskies, first championship since 2016, ending a 9-year drought for the team. That was the longest period for Auriemma and his program without a title, since Rebecca Lobo and Jen Rosati led their Huskies to their first championship in 1995. Since then, the Huskies have had dominant runs, including in the early 2000s, led by Sue Bird and Diana Taurasi, 2009-10 with Maya Moore, and finally the four straight from 2013-16 with Brianna Stewart. All were in attendance in Florida on Sunday to see the Huskies' latest title. You never know if you'll be back in this situation again, said Auriemma, but we kept hanging in there, and that's because these players make me want to hang in there every day. We'll take a short break now and return with selections from the Decatur Herald and Review from Monday, April 7th, 2025, with some selections from the weekend edition. Please stay tuned.